Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Edie's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in later and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We are going to talk about some of the worst music lyrics in rock history, in rock and pop history. The Price is Right's coming to town. And it's Monday, which means the Monday morning movie reviews will happen. Lots of movies to talk about this morning. It'll be with Colin Suter and Eric Childress will join me as they do every week. We'll review all the new movies, and then Eric will stick around, and we'll talk about the box office numbers and how these movies did over the weekend. Again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on Facebook, too, facebook.com/Nick D Show. You say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about you?
Okay. Good weekend?
Yeah. Rode a camel.
What?
I rode a camel.
You rode a camel?
We went to a pumpkin patch that was also a carnival that also had camels.
That's not what I expected to hear that you did this weekend.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
Was it one hump or two?
Two. Emily and I did it together.
Was it fun?
Yeah. George was very nice.
George?
The camel.
George's name, the camel's name was George.
Yep.
We'll talk about this later. Vic is in the newsroom. Vic, did you ride a camel this weekend?
11 things you need to know about camels. Coming up next. I had a good weekend. I can't wait to hear why the heck they had a camel at this thing. That's
apparently it's a thing now.
Really?
Okay.
Well, I've been to some of those things. I've never seen a camel. I'm doing well, Nick. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. So we'll talk about what we did over the weekend a little bit later on, but we got the guys waiting, Colin and Eric are waiting to get on to talk about the new movies, and we will do just that after we take this break on 720 WGN. I rode a camel. Okay. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here till 5 a.m. It is Monday, and that means my dad will call in to tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We like to start off the week with a laugh, so my dad's going to call up and tell a joke. We are going to talk about some of the worst lyrics in rock and pop history. Over the years, and there have been a lot of really terrible lyrics. We'll have a lot of fun with that. And The Price is Right is coming to town, sans Drew Carey, but it's Price is Right Live, and you could win some money, and we'll talk a little bit about that in other game shows. All that and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and stay connected with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay, as I said, it is Monday, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews, which we kick off the show every Monday morning with. Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to review all the new movies, and then Eric sticks around and we talk about the box office numbers and tell you how they did over the weekend. So we got some movies to talk about here. Let's get the guys going so we can start it. And here's Eric. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin. Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So, we got some new movies to talk about. None of us saw Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween.
Nope.
I saw the first one. I don't know if that makes any difference, but I understand that, like, they've really, you know, the advertising, they've thrown Jack Black in to a lot of the commercials, but he's barely in the movie.
Yeah, I've heard so many different stories about this. Like, I mean, he wasn't even listed on IMDb as of like earlier this week.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And now he's currently being listed at buried at the bottom, and it just says uncredited.
Yeah, well, they put him in the commercials though, so they, I mean, uh-huh. I guess they want to sell some tickets, you know. He's too busy. He's got that house with the clock in it. That's that's what's going on there.
AKA Goosebumps 2.
The first, yeah, pretty much. The first Goosebumps movie was okay. It was fine. I could think, you know, if I were a little kid, I'd probably really love it because it's, creepy stuff come to life and all kinds of cool stuff. It was fine. And I'm sure this is probably just more of the same. And we'll talk about how it did at the box office a little bit later on. But let's jump into some of the other stuff that we've got to talk about here. Colin, why don't you start with July 22nd.
Okay, well, it's actually called 22 July.
Oh, 22 July. Oh, this is Greengrass's new movie, right?
This is the latest from Paul Greengrass.
Man, man.
Currently available on Netflix and also playing at the Landmark Century if you want to see it on the big screen. And it covers the events in Oslo, Norway on July 22nd, 2011, when a guy who was a member of this hate group called the Knights Templar, he blew up a building in the government district near the office of the prime minister, then went to an island nearby and gunned down 69 students and teachers at this summer camp. And in all, 77 people died this day. And, you know, of course, you think, you know, with this is a Paul Greengrass film, that we would expect this to take place only on that day, but that's actually just the first half hour. The rest of the movie, which runs a little over 2 hours, covers the aftermath. So we see different perspectives of the aftermath. We see the terrorist himself, played by Anders Danielsson-Lee. He's a very calm, cooperative, and very matter-of-fact about his intentions. And he enlists the help of a lawyer who has to take the case and defend him. So that's one story thread. Another big story thread is of these two teenage brothers, two students who survived the shooting, and how the older one has to recover from being shot three times. He has to learn to walk again. He has to get a new glass eye. So it's very reminiscent of the movie last year, Stronger, with Jake Gyllenhaal. The film also covers, you know, what the prime minister has to deal with in admitting to the public that his people had intel on this guy, this shooter, and didn't do enough to look into it. So the film has all these threads going on, and it all builds up into a courtroom proceeding. And the terrorist, he's hoping for a particular outcome that will help his cause. You know, like I said, this is from Paul Greengrass. He's the director of Bloody Sunday, United 93, and Captain Phillips. So the subject here definitely fits in his wheelhouse. And the first half hour of the film that covers the main event is certainly, fits in with his filmography as well. And its urgency and the visceral experience of it, the very matter-of-fact nature of it. It's not quite as shaky cam as his other films are. The camera's a little more nailed down this time. But it's still the first half hour of this movie is still pretty shocking to watch. It does have that kind of "you are there" kind of feel to it that a lot of his other films have. Once the movie settles into more conventional terms with the storytelling, it becomes less of this director's work. It's less his signature on it. But I still think it's a compelling film to watch, especially since I'm, not too familiar with the story, and its aftermath and who this terrorist was. The scenes with the terrorists are probably the most compelling, because how strangely matter-of-fact and cooperative he is about everything. It doesn't go quite the way you think it's going to go. And I think the performances are outstanding across the board, especially as the teenager who has to go into recovery. He much like Jake Gyllenhaal last year in Stronger, you really feel this guy's, physical pain and what he has to go through. And there's many times when I winced, during his scenes of what he had to go through. This is not one of Greengrass's best films, but it's certainly not one of his weakest. He's got a couple weak ones here and there, but, I think this is definitely worth watching, definitely worth your time. This is a movie worth seeing.
Okay. That's 22 July, which is available on Netflix, and it's playing at the Landmark Century, and it's playing in Highland Park, too, at the Renaissance.
Right.
Always been a fan of, you know, like when, you know, Paul Greengrass has made some really amazing films. And again, when I heard about this, when I read about this, I didn't realize it was on Netflix. Otherwise, I would have watched it for sure over the weekend. When I read about it, I was like, yeah, that sounds like something Paul Greengrass would handle. But it's interesting, you know, how the scope of this movie is different than the kind of things that he's kind of known for, like the in real time, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think it works. I mean, I definitely think that it was time for him to go beyond and just doing, you know, the events of the day thing. I think that would have just been a little cliche for him. So I admire that he kind of went beyond that, because there are interesting stories to tell from this story other than just covering the day itself. Yeah. So he definitely made the case for that.
Okay, cool. All right, that's 22 July in a couple of theaters, and it's on Netflix. All right, I'm looking forward to watching that one. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about After Everything, a.k.a. Shotgun?
Yeah, the movie was previously known as Shotgun. It's currently called After Everything, and it premiered at South by Southwest, which I think I might have reviewed it back then, but it was also chosen to be a part of the Chicago Critics Film Festival this year. And it's seemingly a familiar story. Jeremy Allen White, who's on Shameless, which is shot here in Chicago, he plays a young man in his early 20s. Just doesn't really have a great deal of direction, doesn't have a great job, you know, parties with friends at night and is just out scoping for ladies. But then one day he goes to the doctor and discovers that he has cancer. And so this obviously, you know, puts, you know, changes his course direction. But then he ends up having kind of a meet cute at the subway station with a young lady played by Micah Monroe. And they immediately strike up not just a friendship, but a relationship. And it becomes this story about how one, how this couple is going to deal with his current diagnosis. And that's sort of the basic premise of the rest of this film. And I think it's an interesting one to follow, because we've seen a lot of movies where, you know, the meet-cutes happen early on, and then the cancer is, you know, thrown out at the end of the second act, and we have to, you know, wait for them to die. You know, it's just your typical Nicholas Sparks type things. But here, that element is introduced in the very first act, and, you know, this becomes a movie that is more about living with cancer more than waiting to die from it. And I think that the relationship between these two people is very realistic, very believable. It's funny at times, sometimes, often, hard to watch. It puts it in kind of in the same ballpark, I think, as a movie like 50-50, which is also, you know, kind of mined very similar territory. It's not quite, you know, as good as 50-50 was, but, you know, as a movie that kind of flew under the radar, I actually saw it on the opening night of South by Southwest, and it really kind of struck me, anyone who's, you know, we've all been touched by this disease in some manner, and especially if you've had to live with someone for a long while struggling with the disease, this is a film that really kind of rings true. It's a movie that, deals with the course of relationship, sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly, and all of it, without feeling a cliche the way that, a lot of movies like that feel. I really recommend this one. I really hope that people will go over to Facets where it's playing and check this one out, because I liked it quite a bit.
It's playing at Facets and at the Pickwick.
Oh, okay.
In Park Ridge. And by the way, I want to mention that, Dan, I don't know if you knew this or not, but they've got the mega theater for Bride of Frankenstein. They're reopening the Pickwick Theater. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but they're calling it the mega theater. They've redid the whole big theater. They put a brand new screen in that's about the size of an IMAX screen, all new projection and everything. So the Pickwick's main, main theater has been totally remodeled, and they're opening it up with a screening of Bride of Frankenstein. That's going to be the first movie that they show in there, and it's on the 18th.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, and my you know, Matthew Hoffman, who runs the classic theater films cinema, he programs that. You know, once a month they do a movie. And he's opening it up, the brand new theater, on Thursday the 18th with Bride of Frankenstein.
Wow.
That's good news. That's really good news. Yeah. Okay, so after everything is out there and Eric is recommending it. Okay, guys, hang on, all right?
And I am too.
Colin, okay. Okay, go ahead.
No, I don't have much more to say about it, except that when I saw the title, I completely blanked on it until Eric started describing it. I did see that.
Okay, hang on a second. Colin, hang on, okay? Colin, hang on. I want to get your thoughts on it, but let's take a break. Hold on. Colin and Eric are here. We're going to take a break for the news when we come back. We'll get Colin's review of After Everything, and we've got more movies to talk about as well. It's Monday morning. Monday morning movie reviews continue after the news. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And, of course, we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and we are doing the Monday morning movie reviews. And that's all coming up right here. And we're going to be talking about terrible lyrics and songs, some of the worst lyrics of all time. Price is Right is coming to Chicago. We're going to talk about that and much more. It is Monday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Okay, Monday morning movie reviews are continuing. Before the break, Eric reviewed a movie called After Everything. He is recommending it. And then we found out that Colin actually saw the movie as well. Eric, welcome back. Colin, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Colin, let's hear what you thought of it.
Well, I like I said, I don't have too much more to add to Eric, but I just didn't recognize the title on our list because I saw it at our film festival when we played it. And often when we watch our own films during the festival, it's usually in the haze of, you know, a whirlwind of a day, which that was. I think we programmed like late Saturday night. And I expected, at the time it was called Shotgun, I was expecting a movie about, you know, with shotguns in it.
Right.
And I just didn't know what it was, but I was very pleasantly surprised at the movie it turned out to be. And I definitely think it's worth checking out. Like I said, I don't have too much more to add to that, but I just want to just throw in that I'm recommending it too.
Okay. So. And I like Micah Monroe very much. Obviously, she was in It Follows.
And her It Follows co-star actually plays one of her roommates in the movie.
Oh,
Olivia Lucardi.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, yeah. There you go. After Everything. All right, let's see. Colin, tell us about The Hate U Give.
All right. Well, this is based on a young adult novel, but it doesn't center around anything magical or, you know, dopey teen romance, although maybe it starts out a little bit that way. But this actually focuses on racism and violence between black citizens and white police. And it stars Amanda Stenberg as Star Carter. That's her name. And her dad, played by Russell Hornsby, used to be in a gang and who now runs a grocery store, and he teaches his kids exactly what to do if being pulled over by cops. And Regina Hall plays her mom, and she lives in a tough neighborhood, but goes to an elite prep school in a neighboring town and keeps these two lives separate in her head. And she has a white boyfriend who doesn't really know too much about where she lives. And one night she goes to a party in her own neighborhood, and she meets an old friend of hers from her childhood, a guy, you know, that she used to know. And he drives her home from the party. They get pulled over. A white cop harasses him, orders him to, you know, out of the car. And then Star witnesses a Laquan McDonald type situation in which an innocent black kid gets gunned down by a white police officer. And the rest of the film is about her fear of being persecuted by, you know, members of her dad's old gang, you know, and whether or not she should testify and go public about, you know, what she saw and what happens, you know, to her friendships at school. And, you know, the more she reveals where she comes from. And so it's a lot for her to deal with. So this has all the makings of a very, you know, compelling movie, especially compelling teen film, with a central character who is you know, worth our attention. And so the fact that this is from a movie from a major studio and it's based on a young adult novel, but it tackles these themes, is definitely something worth noting. Unfortunately, I don't think the movie itself lives up to what it stands for. And I don't think it delivers as well as the main actress in the movie, Amanda Stenberg, who gives a great performance here. The problem with the film is it starts out very strongly. You know, the first half hour or so is very good. It's setting up everything, setting up the characters, giving them long scenes to, you know, really breathe and flesh themselves out. Once the movie gets into the aftermath of the big episode, it starts to feel, especially in the last half hour, it starts to get bogged down in a lot of cliches and a lot of things, you know, like it's checking the list of things we need to have in the film about, that is, you know, that is socially conscious about these subjects, you know, the race riots, the injustice in the case, a little kid holding a gun that stops everything. And it just doesn't feel organic. It doesn't feel like, you know, the way it's directed, it feels very sort of ham-fisted and over the top. It's directed by George Tillman Jr., whose last film was a Nicholas Sparks adaptation, The Longest Ride. He's made a couple good films, but this is definitely from a director who, you know, just isn't confident enough in the source material, which is the book, which I guess the movie added a lot of these things to the adaptation that wasn't in the book, and doesn't trust the audience to get the message itself. It's like, it's kind of feels like a social awareness movie made by a committee, and kind of dumbed down, to sort of suit the young adult audience it's going after. And I think that's unfortunate, because you don't have to dumb this down. You don't have to, you know, hit everyone over the head, you know, with the message. There's one scene in particular, which I saw, you know, I mean, I saw this movie on opening day, with a, you know, sort of, okay, you know, not a big audience, but, certainly a responsive one. And there's a scene in which, Amanda Stenberg is trying to teach her clueless white, elitist, you know, prep school friend, a lesson on, you know, perception on, you know, the situation that she was in. And it's done in such a, it's done in a way that just feels under-rehearsed, underdeveloped, and it came off laughable. The audience was kind of laughing at it, which I don't think was the desired effect. I think we were supposed to be cheering or, you know, saying, yeah, you tell them, girl. But it just had the opposite effect. And, you know, that's kind of unfortunate. There's a lot going for this film. And like I said, it's almost, you know, worth sitting through the whole, it's over 2 hours, and it's almost worth sitting through just for Amanda Stenberg's performance, which is great. She's definitely a young actress to keep an eye on. You know, she gives the movie a better performance than it probably deserves. It's noble. It's about important things. I admire the fact that it exists, and I'm okay, you know, with people recommending it to people, you know, to go see, because, you know, we should want studios to make more, you know, to take more chances and make more films like this for young people. But unfortunately, the execution still matters. And the last half hour of this movie, or last 45 minutes of this movie, really just, I thought, didn't work. So I'm getting a very mixed reaction from me. Not quite recommending it, not quite, you know, telling people to stay away from it either.
Okay. All right. That's The Hate U Give, which is out right now. And there you go. All right. Let's go. Eric, tell us about First Man.
Okay. This is the story of the space race leading up to the July 20th, 1969 landing on the moon. A notable event that we are all aware of through history books. Some of us, not us, but some of us got a chance to live through that moment. And this is told through the eyes of the man who was the first to do it, Neil Armstrong, played in the film by Ryan Gosling. The movie, really is not just about, the days and the months leading up to this, iconic moment. This is a movie that, takes years to develop. Goes into, it's almost like picks up, kind of where the right stuff left off, in many ways, where, we really sort of get a sense of the danger that, that went into this entire endeavor. We meet, a lot of the astronauts around, Neil Armstrong, and his wife, Janet, played by, Claire Foy. What this movie ultimately, kind of has going for it in regards to what the story is doing is just how personal it is for Armstrong and his family, particularly Neil Armstrong, whose history is kind of told us was kind of a kind of a quiet guy. He kind of kept to himself. Some people described him as a cold fish at times. He wasn't quite the guy that would normally you would think to want to be the sort of the poster child for this momentous event, but he happened to be a pretty skilled pilot and was very much at the forefront of all the tests and the experiments, and he just happened to be the right guy at the right time for this job. But a particular event, as depicted early in the film, shows us a reason, a motivation for why Neil Armstrong might have wanted to go to the moon, and that is the death of his young daughter at a very young age, a really horrific event that would scar anyone for life. But in this particular, instance, is a man that was not great at showing emotion, and that he was all his grief was sort of internalized, and is sort of leading up to this momentous thing. When I reviewed this movie from Toronto, I think I said on your show, Nick, that I made a comparison to E.T. of all films, because in that movie, Steven Spielberg said that the only thing that could get Elliot off the greatest trauma in his life, which was the separation of his parents, it had to be something so momentous, so extraordinary, that it would be the only thing that could bring him back from this fill this hole in his life. And that's kind of what you experience here through First Man, leading up to, obviously, this iconic moment that is done with such majesty, such beauty. The score by Justin Hurwitz is so wonderful and magnificent that it's not so present throughout the film, but when you get to the climax of the movie, it is really just quite breathtaking. And I mentioned the idea that this is a film that really kind of shows just how dangerous, how clunky this technology was, as triumphant as it was, and has been glorified, and rightfully so, in movies like The Right Stuff and Apollo 13. It kind of shows you that you really don't want to be an astronaut at this time, because it just feels like you're just being thrown out in a tin can full of rocket fuel, and it's a miracle that anyone survived. So there must have been some really great people behind this thing and in those capsules, and Neil Armstrong just happened to be one of them. This is Damien Chazelle's follow-up to La La Land, and we got Whiplash, La La Land, and First Man, his last three movies, and this is the the mark of a tremendous filmmaker. It shows that he handles epic type stories through very personal you know, strategies. And this film couldn't be more personal. You know, the controversies that we've heard about as far as the flag on the moon is, you know, is such nonsense. I really didn't even want to bring it up.
But by the way, first of all, there is a shot of the American flag on the moon.
Of course there is. There's just not one of him planting the flag.
Right.
Which
right.
is garbage. It's right. just a, it, because, well, I point out to people who have asked me about this, it's not about America planting the flag on the moon. Okay, this is a very personal story, and yet it tells the story through not just Neil Armstrong's eyes, but it really does give you that sense that there was a space race out there. This, you know, it doesn't deflect from American achievement. In fact, this movie is about as patriotic as you possibly could get, because it shows what America can do when it puts its mind to it and when it has great people behind it. And, you know, if we had the idiots talking about that stuff back then, this probably never would have happened, but it did, and it's now not just resulted in one of the most iconic moments in American history, but I think absolutely one of the best films of 2018.
Okay, all right, hang on, guys. There's Eric and Colin and me, and when we come back, Colin will tell us what he thought of First Man after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Monday morning, and we are in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews. It also means that my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because Monday means it's jokey time. So that's all coming up. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up, Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Before the break, Eric told us all about First Man, the latest movie with Ryan Gosling, about Neil Armstrong and the Apollo mission. And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back. Eric said it's one of the best movies of the year. And Colin, what did you think?
Yeah, I think it's also one of the best films of the year. And one of the things that struck me about the film was, and Eric alluded to this, just how unflashy it is, and how sort of very matter of fact it was about the technology and just the sort of clunkiness of it. You know, you really get a sense of just how small the space is, the claustrophobia you feel, you know, when with the shots of the astronauts in these rockets, and you just, you know, I don't remember quite having that feeling on Apollo 13 or even The Right Stuff at times, but this time I really got a sense of like what the technology was that they were dealing with. And that's not a slight on those films at all, but I remember this, it really sticking out this time. It's not, you know, this is the first Damien Chazelle film that is not a musical in any way or dealing with music. Yet there is a strong musical element to it, that, you know, you mentioned, or Eric mentioned the score, and as well as the use of the songs on the radio at the time is also, you know, very particular, and very much, you know, in Chazelle's doing. I want to ask Eric, did you see this movie in IMAX?
I did.
Yeah. Yes. I can't stress enough how important IMAX is to the experience of watching this film. And I wouldn't dare dream of, you know, giving away what is so special about it, but if you're going to go see the film, I can't recommend that experience highly enough. I can't imagine what it must be like without it. But it is, I think, necessary to getting the fullest experience of this movie. Now, IMAX doesn't always do that, but this one is definitely filmed with that in mind. I think Gosling is really terrific in the film, and sometimes when Gosling is made to just kind of be stoic and unexpressive, it kind of puts me at arm's length of the character and the film itself. And I did feel that way through much of this, but not as a. I certainly don't mean it as a criticism, because this is how this was Neil Armstrong, and I think, you know, staying true to that was a, kind of a brave choice for a film that is, you know, this that tackles this kind of subject matter and could easily be made into a kind of typical, you know, schmaltzy Hollywood product. But this is kind of very rough around the edges film. It's, like I said, not very flashy. And, you know, I also think Claire Foy is worth mentioning too. I think she's very good as the wife, who's, you know, trying to keep him grounded and keep making sure that he's not losing sight of the important things. And it just kind of, the two of them really just bring it home at the end. I just think it's really magnificent where this movie goes. So, yeah, I'm definitely highly recommending this film as well.
Okay. All right, we got a break again, and then we'll come back and I'll tell you what I thought of it. And that, as we're talking about First Man, which was disappointed at the box office, and we'll talk about that later on. We'll break here for the news, and then when we come back, I'll give you my review of First Man and more right here on 720 WGN. Dick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday, and that means my dad calls in and tells a jokey time. And we're doing the Monday morning movie reviews. We'll get back to that in a second. Also coming up, we're going to be talking about some of the worst lyrics in rock and pop history. And The Price is Right's coming to Chicago. Yeah. But right now, let's get back to the movie reviews. Before the break, Eric and Colin both gave their reviews of the new film First Man. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. I, too, saw it in IMAX, as you should absolutely see this movie in IMAX. And I, too, think it's one of the best movies of the year. This was a movie that... It is, you know, we've talked about just, you know, the way it's shot and the style in which it's shot. It really is a very, you know, despite the fact that, you know, it covers this monumental event and that it's a big, you know, Hollywood production, it really feels almost shockingly intimate. Do you know what I mean? It takes this massive moment in history, and it's this big-budget IMAX movie, and it feels like an indie. Do you know what I'm saying? It just has that kind of feel to it. And I find that really unique and really something special. Gosling is great in it. I think it's a great performance. And, you know, this is the second science kind of movie in a year that Ryan Gosling played a very stoic character in, and also the second time that it was disappointing at the box office. Because Blade Runner came out about a year ago and also underperformed at the box office, and you know, and he gave that kind of stoic performance in that as well. And I think both performances are great. I think he's terrific in this movie. In fact, I think everybody's really good in this movie. Claire Foy is fantastic, and I loved the juxtaposition of the scenes of him, you know, doing these missions. With what's happening at the home life, you know, because Claire Foy's got to keep the home front going and got to take care of the kids and all that stuff. And so that stuff is really interesting. And I like the scenes with the astronauts, just the camaraderie of the astronauts, where they're hanging out, maybe just having a beer and talking. You get to know these guys, played by, you know, some terrific character actors that we've seen that are very familiar with. And the wives and their relationships and everything. It's a very humanistic movie, and that's the core of it. As Eric mentioned, the tragedy that happens early in the film really is what motivates the rest of the film. And as you're watching all of these missions that these guys are going on, and it is, and they're terrifying. I mean, they're really, you know, if you're claustrophobic in any way, you're going to feel it. The use of sound in this movie is unbelievable. If this movie doesn't get best sound, sound editing, sound, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, it's amazing. But like when you're with these guys in those capsules, and it's terrifying stuff. It's really scary. And you really realize just what risks these guys take. And there are tragedies along the way, too, in the film that they don't shy away from, which also makes, you know, the stakes get higher and higher and higher. They also, you know, touch on the political aspect of it, of how people were feeling about, you know, their tax dollars going to this, and you know, how they how a lot of people in America felt about that at that time. And then it becomes a political pawn, and they touch on that as well. You know, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long, this movie. It doesn't feel long at all because it's just so involving and just so personal. And everybody knows, you know, everybody knows how it ends. You know, I mean, you know that they make it to the moon and that he's the first guy to hit the moon. And when that moment happens, one, it's astonishing the way the effectiveness of that moment when he actually, you know, is the first man on the moon. And when he says those famous words, it really is powerful, like really, really powerful. You've heard those words a million times. We've all heard it, you know, but it felt fresh. I don't know why. I don't know how Chazelle did it, but it felt like, you know, like it came out of this guy's mouth, you know, just naturally, and the impact of it. And then, you know, people were complaining about, like, not seeing him plant the flag, although you get a shot of the flag on. It's not like they ignored that at all. It's there. You know, the American flag is there. But he does something else when he's on the moon, that's really what the movie is really about. You know what I mean? That is what the personal aspect of this movie is. That's what Chazelle is focusing on. And when that moment happens in the movie, I was sobbing. I was in my seat sobbing like a baby at that moment. And it's a real, again, everybody in the theater could hear me because, you know, it's a real quiet moment in the movie. And here I am making a spectacle of myself. And that's the payoff of the movie. And it's huge. It's huge. It's a huge payoff emotionally and everything and symbolically and what the movie really is about. And yes, the very final moments between Claire Foy and Ryan Gosling in the movie is a massive payoff again. This is a great film. It's a great film with great performances. It's beautifully made. It's suspenseful and terrifying and exciting. It's also warm and very humanistic and at times devastating and powerful. And see it in IMAX. I loved this movie. I did not expect to sob like a child during it, but I did. I did just that. And so, yeah, and see it in IMAX. It's absolutely one of the best movies of the year. So that's First Man, and I really wish more people would have seen it over the weekend. I really wish people will listen and go and see it, and if possible, see it in IMAX. So, yeah, that's a great film. So, all right, there you go. That's First Man. Everybody go see it. All right, let's see. Colin, tell us about Bad Times at the El Royale.
All right, well, this is, it's an ensemble film, really, that all takes place at this hotel called the El Royale that exists in California and Nevada, right on the border. So if you're a customer there, you can either get a room in California or you can get a room in Nevada, which is a fun little gimmick there. So among the clientele on one particular evening are Jeff Bridges as a priest, John Hamm is he a salesman? I don't remember now.
He's an appliance salesman, yes.
Right, an appliance salesman. Cynthia Erivo as a professional backup singer for soul groups and soul artists. And Dakota Johnson as a woman who's, you know, hiding something in her room. You'll find out more about that as the film goes on. And the clerk running this hotel on this evening is played by Lewis Pullman, who gives the same spiel about the place to everyone who comes into the door, and whether they want to hear it or not. So over the course of this evening, these characters cross paths multiple times. We learn that not everyone is who they seem to be. Their pasts catch up to them. And then Chris Hemsworth comes in and, you know, really shakes things up. So there's a lot of twists and turns and surprises in this movie, so there's best left unsaid, I guess. So this is directed by Drew Goddard, who made Cabin in the Woods many years ago, which we all enjoyed. And that was also very, that was also full of many twists and turns that we didn't really see coming. This movie is a little more conventional than that film in terms of, you know, the kind of surprises that it delivers. It's, you know, it's been sort of compared to, you know, Tarantino's work. Obviously, there's an influence there, no question about it. And someone said this feels like one of those, you know, late 90s knockoffs of Tarantino's, you know, the kind of wannabe films like, you know, Your 2 Days in the Valley and Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead and Feeling Minnesota and all those kinds of movies. I think this is much better than that. And I mean, it's, you know, it definitely would fit in. It definitely would be accused of that at that time. But I think enough time has passed. We're more removed from that, that we can still enjoy this movie on its own terms, especially because of the cast. The stuff between Cynthia Erivo and Jeff Bridges, I think, is the best stuff. John Hamm is as usual, very funny in this film, and you know, it's a role that requires him to be, you know, is that sort of funny, kind of, you know, weird off-center way. But I do think, though, that the first two-thirds of the movie are stronger than the last third. I don't think the movie ends up quite isn't quite as interesting where it ends up as it was to the buildup of it. A couple of characters come in and really kind of turn things around, but I don't think in a way that really kind of caught me off guard. This movie kind of goes where I sort of expected it to go, and I kind of wish that it had surprised me a little bit more in the last third. That being said, though, I do think this is an entertaining film, you know, filled with characters that I enjoyed, you know, getting to know, and you know, filled with twists and turns that I enjoyed, you know, discovering. But I just think the strength of it is in the build up more than the payoff. But I do think this is a movie worth checking out.
Okay,
if you're in the mood for some dark humor and violence and, you know, nasty stuff.
Right. All right. Okay, guys, hang on. And Colin and Eric are going to hang on, and we're going to take a break. Colin just reviewed Bad Times at the El Royale, and he is giving it a good review. And we'll find out what I thought of it and what Eric thought of it after the break. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. What's happening? It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. It's Monday morning. We're going to also be talking about terrible lyrics, some of the worst lyrics in rock pop history. The Price is Right's coming to town. And it's the Monday morning reviews, which we're in the middle of right now, with Colin and Eric. And Eric will stick around, and we will talk about box office as well. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on WGN. All right. Before the break, Colin gave us his thoughts on Bad Times at the El Royale. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Eric, what did you think?
I think this is a great movie, and I think it's a great movie for reasons that extend beyond the kind of the surface level storyline with the kind of the Tarantino like twists and turns that you know, we might come to expect in a movie like this. You know, Drew Goddard, you know, who did The Cabin in the Woods, you know, famously, that was a movie where he kind of bended the genre expectations, that we had with horror movies. But here his, it's not so limited, because what I see this movie as being, is a complete commentary on the sins of America in the 1960s. Everything from, government surveillance to race, to cult leaders, to, you know, all these kind of things, you know, the Vietnam War, you know, figures, you know, at one point in the end of the film. And it's a movie that, you know, is viewing these characters through that prism. And while it's giving us, you know, this incredibly, I think, incredibly entertaining film with, I gotta say, there at least more moments in this movie where I was like shock jumped out of my seat than I think any movie in recent history. I mean, they're just moments of, you know, whether it be because of a loud noise or shocking death or something like that. I think I counted four moments where I was like, good God, man, you know, I'm not expecting that to happen at that moment. So you have all that, you know, all that stuff is a lot of fun to be had. And, you know, these characters, you know, some of the couple of twists and turns have been spoiled by trailers or TV commercials and things like that. So it'll be a lot more fun if you haven't seen any of that stuff. But it hardly spoils the experience because, you know, Colin mentioned that the relationship between Jeff Bridges and Cynthia Erivo, who is also is in Widows, Steve McQueen's film, coming out in about a month. I think that whole episode, you know, which becomes, you know, I mean, it feels like an ensemble movie. It feels like, you know, we're going to get, we follow certain characters through certain periods and whatnot, but those two characters are really kind of the heart of the film, and they're not just, you know, thrown to the side, you know, early on. They, you know, they form a, you know, sort of a, there's a completeness to them, that goes through the movie, and the affliction that Bridges' character has, you know, also kind of feeds into the idea of how we want to, you know, forget the worst elements of the 1960s and just reflect on the, you know, the kind of, you know, the, what the hotel purports to represent, that it feels like it's this, you know, the way that Lewis Pullman's character describes what this hotel is, that you can go on the California side, you can go on the Nevada side. Both sides have their, you know, their pleasures and whatnot. But this, we see that this is a hotel that is just not, it is not really functional anymore. You know, he's the only one there, and he's got, you know, he's got his own issues. And so this feels like, you know, something that's been left behind, a relic of a past age, and it's just something that you know some of these characters can't get their mind around, and I think that's going to be the same way for the audience too. And I think this is Jeff Bridges' best performance since The Fisher King. Honestly, I think he's that good in this movie. And I really got to give it up for, I think Lewis Pullman is not getting the kind of recognition that he deserves for this movie.
He's great in it.
The son of Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
He, again, the character that seems like is going to be a throwaway, he's going to get a few laughs, and then be tossed aside, which is not the case, because when we find out, like, the full arc of his character, I think it's not just a tremendous moment for the audience, but I think also just puts into focus what this movie is really trying to be. I think it's a tremendous performance, from him, and I think, again, I think everybody in this movie is really good, you know, really up to and leading Hemsworth. I think the movie is, very suspenseful in the third act. I didn't feel it let up at all. I think it kind of it ties everything into a nice little bow by the end. And by the end, I was fully satisfied by the arc of this movie. And I had the feeling walking out of this movie that this was going to be the kind of film that was going to be rediscovered and talked about and reevaluated many, many times over in the future, the way that, you know, we see more and more of these days. I think it's that good a movie.
Okay. All right. We're going to break here, and when we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of it. Eric, Colin, hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right. You guys are going to hang on. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of Bad Times at the El Royale. And it's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hey, we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on 720 WGN. Here until 5 a.m., 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke and lots more stuff. But we're finishing up the movie reviews here. Eric and Colin both reviewed Bad Times at the El Royale. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, I'm with you on this one. I think it's absolutely one of the best movies of the year. And I think it's a great movie. And I think everything that you said is absolutely true. This movie First of all, let me just say this. The soundtrack is unbelievable.
It's great.
Oh, my God. The music is just the soundtrack is unbelievable. And I'm assuming that the third of the budget went to it. But I do think it is a movie that is about something and really does touch on a lot of things that were happening in that time period in the late 60s, and doing it in a very clever way and a very insightful way. And there's a lot of emotion in this movie. This isn't just an exercise in style. You know what I mean? It's
right.
It's not. There's more going on here than just being a flashy sort of Tarantino-esque ripoff. You mentioned Jeff Bridges' character. Jeff Bridges' character, what's happening in it with him is deep and significant and moving. Same said with Cynthia Erivo. She's great in this movie. It's a terrific performance, and there's a lot of layers going on here. Dakota Johnson and the relationship with her sister in this movie is really interesting, and then how that's connected to Chris Hemsworth, who was essentially playing, you know, like a Charles Manson type character. And John Hamm, I don't want to give anything away, but there's, you know, stuff that happens with him that is very timely to what was happening at that time. And then Lewis Pullman, the emotional connection at the very end of this movie. There's a scene at the very end of this movie, and I won't give it away. But it really was. I mean, it was more than I had expected. You know, I expected a lot of fun and twists because Cabin in the Woods was a lot of fun and there was a lot of twists. And I love that movie. And I think Cabin in the Woods is one of the most creative and best, you know, horror films of the past like 15 years. So I really love it. But this movie goes much deeper than that, you know, much, much deeper. There's profound stuff happening in this movie. And, yeah, I mean, you could say, you know, that it's got, you know, it's, you know, you could say that stylistically, oh, you know, because they have the play cards to, you know, to tell you, you know, what part of the story is next. And it does mess around with the timeline. And so immediately you're going to think Tarantino. You know what I mean? That's what you're going to think. But I think there's more going on than just this being like, you know, aping Tarantino's style. There's some real deep, significant stuff happening here with some really, really deep and three-dimensional characters that have a lot of stuff going on. I think this movie's great. I think it's funny. I think it's shocking. I think it's clever. John Hamm, I just love John Hamm. He's really, really funny in this movie. Every time he said accoutrement, I laughed my ass off. And just the whole spiel at the beginning of the movie is great. I think Dakota Johnson is really good in this movie as well. You know, there are certain reactions that she has to what's happening that I think are really, really funny. Nick Offerman shows up briefly. You don't really get to see his face, but he does.
Yeah.
Nick Offerman does show up. He's in it. I just think this is great, great stylistic stuff. I think Drew Goddard is a terrific filmmaker. And he's also, listen, he directs, you know, and is executive producer, and he directs A Good Place on TV. So he automatically gets a pass as far as I'm concerned. because the stuff that this guy comes up with, I mean, he's part of the Lost team. And I mean, he's a real creative guy that tries to work outside the box and yet, you know, grounded in some sense of reality with realistic characters and some real emotions. I didn't think that this was just simply an exercise in style, and I don't think it's just a retread of a Tarantino movie. I think it's much, much, much more than that. And I have to say that the Saturday afternoon that I spent in the theater for 5 hours, because they're both really long movies, they're both the same running time, by the way. First Man and El Royale are 2 hours and 21 minutes. They're both that long. It was like the best afternoon I've spent in a movie theater probably for the entire year. Like back-to-back watching First Man and then seeing Bad Times at the El Royale. I was like, wow, okay, this is as good a movie day as you can get. So I think they're both of the movies that I saw this weekend, I think are two of the best movies of the year. So anyway,
both films take you through the entire 1960s.
Exactly, that's the other thing. And what's his name is in both of them. He plays Jeff Bridges' prison doctor. and he was in.
Shea Whigham.
Yeah, he's in both of them. I was like, oh, it's gonna get a little double feature. but anyway, So anyway, that's Bad Times at the El Royale. It was a good weekend for movies, and fortunately, the two movies that we just talked about, nobody went to see. which is unfortunate. Okay, so what do we got next week? Next week we've got Halloween.
Yeah.
And is anything else opening?
That's the only major thing opening. Only big. I mean, I think there's some other, like, I think Beautiful Boy opens.
Okay.
Here, so some small releases, limited releases that are expanding, but Halloween is the big one.
Halloween is the big one, and it'll probably be number one by far.
Monster.
Yeah, it'll be huge. It will be. Yep. It will be.
And
huge.
I gotta mention the McHenry Drive-In. In McHenry, Illinois, they are going to have a double feature of the original Halloween and the new Halloween.
Oh.
On Friday.
That's cool.
Next weekend.
That's
cool. So I'm definitely going to try to go to that.
All right. That's cool. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
All right. Very, very good. All right. Well, Colin, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Sure.
You can tell us all about that your experience at the drive-in.
Yeah, sounds good.
Cool. Okay, there you go, Colin. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. Eric, let's talk box office.
Yeah.
What the hell, man? Venom. Come on.
Yeah, what the hell is... That's all I need to say, really.
I mean, come on. $35.7 million, $142.8 in 2 weeks. Wow, I can't believe it.
There must be a law somewhere. We always joke about the law that, you know, you have to see the new comic book movie that's out. But that's the only way I can explain it, because I don't know anyone that likes that movie.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's not even like it's one of the DC movies that you get all the DC fanboys up all, you know, frothed about because, you know, no one likes them.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I don't understand how, you know, it was headed for like a 60% drop, which I even thought was not bad, considering the movie. I thought it was going to drop a lot lower.
Yeah.
Or a lot higher. I kind of thought that it would be number one this weekend, but by a very slim margin.
Yeah.
Over the number two movie, and that just didn't happen. So I mean, I don't, you know, it looks like this movie is going to make $200 million now. I don't know why though.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't get it. I just don't get it. All right, number two, A Star Is Born, $28 million, $94 million 2 weeks. This is a hit.
Yeah, this is what we've been talking about for several weeks, and we talked about last week that the word of mouth was just tremendous.
Yeah.
For this thing, and it's as October releases goes, it's the fourth highest 10-day release in October history, and that includes Venom.
Yeah,
it's like Venom, Gravity, The Martian, and A Star Is Born.
Yeah,
so there you go. So this movie is headed for somewhere easily north of $160 million.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna see if it hits that $200 mark.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's gonna. I still think it's gonna have legs. I still think people are gonna be seeing.
Oh yeah,
you know. Number three, very disappointed. First Man, $16.5 million. I'm very disappointed with those numbers. I was hoping more people would see it, and more people need to see it.
Yeah, I am too, and I don't want to believe that the flag controversy, you know, played into that a bit, that 35% of this country heard that and stayed away from it. I'd like to think that we're a smarter country than that, but, you know, you never know. But I think, honestly, I mean, if I'm being real practical about it, I think that Universal screwed up in where they released this movie. For one, they released it. They probably didn't think that the Star Is Born juggernaut was coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they probably didn't figure that. But you know, a couple weeks ago, they probably got a little scared when they saw the reviews for this thing and it was going to have legs. So all the adults. I mean, I was at a family get together today, and the first. The only movie anyone asked me about again was A Star Is Born.
Right.
Did you see it? Did you see it? And they all saw it. And then I had to tell them, like, okay, now you have to go see First Man.
Yeah.
That was what I told all of them.
Yeah.
Like, go see it. Like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely go see that. But so I think that they screwed that up. And Universal, who released First Man, next week they're releasing Halloween.
Yeah.
So they've played against themselves. Now, I guess, you know, they're certainly playing the long game with this for the awards and whatnot. But, you know, a $60 million production, you know, I think that if they were to release this thing maybe around Thanksgiving...
Right.
They might have had a better, a turnout. They might have had even better legs. And I think this movie is going to have some legs. You know, I've got a kind of an estimate somewhere between 55 and 75 million still right now, because that's what the history suggests of movies that are this good and that are probably going to be nominated for Best Picture in October. So I think that there's still some hope for some legs to this thing.
Yeah.
But if this thing drops off next week, then I don't know. I give up.
Yeah, I know. I'm very disappointed. Number four, Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween, 16.2 million. How did the first one do?
First one did like 23.6.
Total?
Yeah.
Oh.
No.
The opening weekend.
Total.
Oh, 80 million.
Opening
total.
Weekend was 23.6. Oh, okay. Yeah, so it was already lower than the opening weekend. I don't see this thing, you know, getting, you know, far over 50 million, even if that.
Mm.
I mean, 16.2, I think, is a little better than what they were expecting this weekend, frankly. But Sony also cut the budget in half on this one, and maybe, you know, maybe some of that was Jack Black's salary, who
yeah.
knows, but
yeah, yeah.
But it only cost $35 million, so they were smart to realize that, you know, without any kind of star power, that they were relying on just the brand name,
right?
So I think, you know, they made the smart move, but, you know, I think this movie is gonna, you know, be making its profit on home video.
Got it. Number five, Smallfoot, 9.3 million, 57.6 million total.
Yeah, not particularly strong numbers. It has legs, clearly family entertainment, but they're not huge numbers.
Yeah, six, Night School, $8 million, $59.8 million. Is that low for Kevin Hart or not lately? Because he's not been making...
Well, it's low for Kevin Hart, but it looks like his movie is probably going to end up turning in profit. I mean, it's headed for probably north of 70, you know, to 70, 75 million. It's low for Kevin Hart, but that's still not bad for, you know, a budget this small,
right? Seven, Bad Times at the El Royale, 7.2 million. That's about what you expected, or a little bit less.
Yeah, no, I didn't think the movie was going to hit 10 million. I mean, they've advertised the heck out of this thing, but, you know, I mean, we love Jeff Bridges, but he's not the biggest draw in the world. and, you know, it's just, you know, these ensemble hotel movies, you know, they take place in Transylvania or have John Cusack in them, these hotel movies don't do very well.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you.
The Hotel Artemis.
I'll tell you, well, yeah, which is another really good movie, but
yeah.
I'll tell you, it was packed. There were more people, and this is weird, we went Saturday,
yeah.
There were more people in attendance, and this was in Skokie, at the theater in Skokie, there were more people in
yeah.
attendance at El Royale than there were at First Man.
Mm.
I don't understand it. Seriously, I was like, really, when people kept walking into the theater, when we were sitting in the theater for Bad Times, I was like, what the hell? What's going on?
It's really funny. You know, we touched on this earlier too, but you saw two movies back to back. One is about the best of America in the 1960s, and the other one is about the worst.
Yeah, right. It's true. It's very true. Number eight, A House with a Clock in Its Walls. It's up to 62.2 million. Number nine, The Hate U Give, 1.7, 2.4 total. That's very disappointing, considering it's in a lot of theaters, right?
It's actually not in a lot of theaters. No,
it's
only like 240 some theaters.
Oh.
So that's actually a pretty decent number.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, I don't think the ceiling is going to be very high for this, but for given the amount of theaters that it's in,
right.
That was, you know, one of the better per theater averages in on the list this week.
And A Simple Favor stays in the top 10, which is cool. 52 million total. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice little send off for that movie.
Yeah,
one last week in the top 10, gets over $50 million, a $20 million budget. Again, hopefully Lionsgate, you know, puts a little money into that for the award season, because I think somewhere they have a chance.
Yeah. Okay. And what are we looking at numbers wise for Halloween? What do you think?
Oh man, I want to say it's going to fall. It'll fall short of It numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking somewhere in the 60s.
I would say that's about right. I would guess that's about right.
Yeah.
So
I mean, the name recognition for this thing, I mean, you know, I'm in the minority on this thing that I think it's bad, but a lot of people are praising it. So it doesn't matter. People are going to show up next week. They'll make up their own minds.
Yep.
But this movie's going to be a huge hit.
I got my tickets already.
I'm ready. Yeah.
So I'm all set. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Take care. There's Eric Childress, everybody, and we will talk to him again next week, and we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke in a little while. 312-981-7200. is the phone number for talk and text. We're going to be talking about worst pop rock lyrics. And there's some beauts here. And we would love to hear from you if you have any lyrics that are just ridiculous. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Also coming up is Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Hey, before we jump into the worst pop rock lyrics ever, and you, we would love to hear from you via talk or text, 312-981-7200. I do want to once again tell everybody about my upcoming screening, my next film club screening, which all of them are at the AMC Rosemont 18. That's formerly the Movico. That's where we host them. And we have our film club screenings upstairs on the second floor in the beautiful Premiere Theater with giant love seats and a huge curved screen with great sound and projection. And we're doing our tribute to Burt Reynolds. It'll be Tuesday, November 13th, and we are showing The Longest Yard, which I consider one of Burt Reynolds' best movies, and certainly one of his most entertaining. A great prison-slash-football movie with a wonderful collection of character actors and some really funny moments, and it's a really, really terrific movie, directed by the great Robert Aldridge. Burt Reynolds gives one of his best performances in it, and it is a very, very entertaining movie, and we hope everybody can make it out for our tribute to Burt Reynolds. It's only $10. Parking is free, and you can get your tickets at amctheaters.com, amctheaters.com, for The Longest Yard from 1974. I vividly remember seeing the movie for the first time when it came out. I was 9 when it came out, and my folks and I went to go see it at the Ford City Theater. And it was a packed crowd. I remember it was like a Saturday night, and it was just packed. And the movie works on such a great level with a good fun crowd, because I remember the reaction of that crowd was really insane during that movie. Like, there was laughter and cheers, and you know, the place, it was, there were wall to wall people in there. And it was one of those movies that I remember vividly. Every single person in that room had a raucous good time and just was like very vocal about how much they enjoyed the movie. And it was, it was really, really cool. And I hope we can have that, at our screening on Tuesday, November 13th. And it's a remastered 4K digital version of the movie. And this is The Longest Yard is a movie that doesn't get shown very often. Very rarely shows up on cable, doesn't really get screened in the movies, and we're thrilled to have it. When we found out it was available that we could have it, because we were trying to think of we wanted to definitely do a Burt Reynolds, you know, tribute, because he's Burt Reynolds. And so, you know, we didn't think we'd be able to get The Longest Yard, because it's just, like I said, it's not out there. You can get the remake, the Adam Sandler remake, Dan, which you said, again, you've seen like 800 times on cable.
Right.
But the original one very rarely gets shown. And if you, it's interesting to watch the 74 version of The Longest Yard now, because it's not the most PC movie ever made. Especially the opening scenes involving Bert and his girlfriend. you know, it's 1974. It was a different time. And the way he treats her at the beginning of the movie, and the whole drunk driving played for laughs, that that kind of thing, it doesn't sit well right now. But back in 1974, it was like, that's okay. So, but it's weird to watch it now with that in mind. So just keep in mind, this is not the most politically correct movie. It's also a prison movie, so it's, you know, it's rated R. I'm going to leave the kids at home on this one. But anyway, The Longest Yard, the original Burt Reynolds classic, Tuesday, November 13th. The movie starts at 8. You can get there early, get some food at the concession stand downstairs, bring it up to the dining room. You can have some cocktails and stuff. And then at 8 o'clock, we'll all go into the beautiful Premiere Theater, sit down. I will introduce the movie. We will watch The Longest Yard together and laugh and have a great time. And then afterwards, I will give you like behind-the-scenes stories and little tidbits and trivia, and we'll talk about the movie and do like a Q&A and just have fun, which is what we do every month. So it's Tuesday, November 13th, and it is at the AMC Rosemont 18, amctheaters.com. Right now, go there right now. Go to the seating chart. Pick out the seats that you want, and then choose them, and then we'll see you on Tuesday, the 13th of November. And then in December, we are going to show Bill Murray in Scrooged, and there's going to be a special tie-in and some special stuff that's going to happen for that screening. And we'll give you more details on that as they come along. So, all right, AMCtheaters.com. Get your tickets now for The Longest Yard. News is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCiglio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago here till 5 a.m. And I am your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is the beginning of the week. It's Monday, and that means my dad's going to call up and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. We are going to jump into, we have Josiah M. Hesse for Westword wrote an article about the worst rock pop lyrics of all time. So this is his opinion. But I would love to hear from you guys if you've got some of the dumbest lyrics in music, if you would like to talk about them. I'll have a little fun with this. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Before we jump into that topic, if you weren't listening at the top of the show when I always say hello to my coworkers here, I said hello to Dan and I said, Dan, how was your weekend? And you said,
I rode a camel.
You rode a camel.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit more about this before we jump into. If you guys jump in here with your terrible lyrics, 312-981-7200. So you were, tell us where you were when you...
Every year my friends and our families go to a pumpkin farm. It's called Dieter Farms, or I don't know if it's Dieter Farms. I believe it's Dieter Farms in Buffalo Grove, and it's more of a carnival. It's a huge pumpkin patch, but it's kind of a carnival slash hayride type situations, and they have petting zoos and various animals and things like that, and they offer camel rides. And so we took them up on their offer.
Took them up on the did you? How much was it? Did you have to?
$5 a person.
$5 a person for the camel ride. How long did you get to ride the camel?
Maybe 5 minutes.
Yep. So are they? Does someone hold on to the to the camel, like a rope or something to hook the camel?
Yeah, you climb a staircase to jump on, and then the handler walks him around in a figure eight pattern.
Yeah. Was the camel, because camels are notoriously mean animals.
Yes.
Like they spit at you, and was this camel okay?
Yeah, George seemed to be fine.
George. I mean, yeah. Now, did they tell you his name was George?
We did ask his name, and they told us his name was George.
George the camel.
George the camel. So, but yes, we actually talked about that, and we couldn't remember if the camel spit or the llama spit or the alpaca spit. I think the alpacas and camel spit. But yeah, I mean, he seemed to be in good spirits. He was a little chilly, so I was concerned for him. But they said that with his hair, he was fine. So
yeah, well, they're used to the desert usually,
right?
From what I understand. Well, that's interesting. I've been to petting zoos in the past, but I've never. Had the opportunity to ride a camel.
Yeah, I had not seen it before last year at this place. One of our regular texter, Kathy, I know one of her family members recently did it as well. So I think it's kind of a something new, but something becoming more present
and more popular. Camels.
Yeah,
people enjoy riding camels.
Apparently so.
Okay,
we went right at the tail end because there was a line earlier in the day.
Big popular line to ride George. Yeah. Was he the only camel there? Were there other camels?
No, there was another. There was two camels. So, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know the name of the other one.
Okay. Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Did Emily enjoy it?
She did.
Yeah.
She, when we were talking about the next day, she was talking more about the ponies, but that she really
Well, did. Because she wants a horse.
She does want a horse.
Yeah.
Because she's three and very responsible. That's what she tells us.
She can take care of a horse.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see any difficulty with that.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Just a couple apples, little bits of hay.
Yeah.
Stable, that's all.
Just put the horse in the garage.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, well, camel riding. Yeah, I've never done it. Was the smell significant?
No, it wasn't bad. They've got it down to a science, so it's one of those where it's as soon as they go, they stop, sweep it, put into container, close the container, and then you continue on. So
right, all right. Well, that's an interesting weekend right there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. Well, all right. I've been to petting zoos, but never seen a camel. I've never seen a camel live. before. Maybe I have at the zoo or something
yeah.
when I was a kid. I've never been up close or anything. Did they have a saddle on the camel?
They did, kind of. It wasn't like a horse saddle per se, but there was like pieces around it. So we were sitting on the camel bareback, but there was like a side rail next to him on a piece of cloth. So
you didn't fall off. Oh, I see. Oh, all right. Okay. I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't either.
All right. Well, we now know it is. George the camel. All right, George. I find it really funny that they named him George.
Yeah, it would not strike you as a camel name.
No, it doesn't sound like a camel name. Oh, man. All right. Well, that must have been fun. I'm glad you had an entertaining weekend. I did not ride any camels over the weekend. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about the worst rock or pop lyrics ever. And this is an opinion piece by a guy named Josiah Hesse. And we would love to hear your thoughts on terrible lyrics. 312-981-7200. Now, Dan, you know that my go-to is the most ridiculous, rhyme ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Steve Miller, who, by the way, is mentioned in this article as well, because he has written some of the dumbest lyrics ever.
773 also texted in on him.
Texted on Steve Miller?
Yes.
Yeah. My Steve Miller choice is from Take the Money and Run, which is they went down to El Paso and ran into a great big hasso. Because there are a lot of stupid lyrics that where they force words that, well, that in this example don't exist. Like that word hasso, that's not a word. They changed the word hassle to hasso so it could rhyme with El Paso. And it's every time I've heard that song, I just go, "What is the stupidest thing?" And then I think he also rhymes faxes and Texas. Just wants to know what the fax is. So he just doesn't matter. Like the rhyming scheme doesn't matter to Steve Miller. He'll just like make up words or change words so that they rhyme to fit into his stupid song. But that's the one that sticks out for me. I've mentioned it many, many times just because it's just the stupidest thing I've ever heard. El Paso, Hasso. Dan, do you have any dumb lyrics that stand out?
Yeah, there's a song that was really popular in the late 90s, early 2000s that I absolutely hated. It was by a band called LFO. And the song was called Summer Girls. And my friends, for some ungodly reason, enjoyed the song. But the chorus went, "New Kids on the Block had a bunch of hits. Chinese food makes me sick. And I think it's fly when girls stop by for the summer. For the summer."
What? What? Did you say Chinese food makes me sick?
It makes him sick, yeah, apparently.
And the New Kids on the Block had a lot of hits. But Chinese food makes him sick.
Mm-hmm. And he likes when girls stop by for the summer. It's fly, actually. It's,
fly. Okay. Wow. I don't know that song, but that's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That fits right into the category that we're talking about. All right. Well, let's take a look at some of the that are in this article. First up is Cher with Believe. "Do you believe in life after love? I can feel something inside me say, I really don't think you're strong enough." I can't even understand because of that's what the one where she uses the
auto-tune
thing. I don't think I've ever listened to the words of Believe. It often sounds as if producer Mark Taylor did everything he could to chop and to distort the words of this song. Unfortunately, they still come in as clear today as they did when this song was first released in the late 90s. And they're just unpleasantly infectious. Yeah, that's all right. How about this? Now, Steve Miller pops in again. This is for the Joker. "Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice, wow, because I speak of the pompatus of love. Do you know they made a movie, Dan, called The Pompatus of Love?
I did not know that.
I can't remember who was in it. You can, I think, look it up. It was, I want to say maybe David Arquette is in it or somebody in the, along those lines. It was, yeah, and it was named after that stupid lyric from the Joker.
John Cryer.
Similar, right?
Very, oh, yeah, especially that time frame. And yeah. Mia Sara.
The Pompatus of Love. What year was that?
95.
The Joker has always been a jukebox favorite of drunk meatheads who believe they're charming enough to approach strangers, which is appropriate because the songwriter also seems to believe he's Oscar Wilde, yet he writes the lyrical equivalent of a soiled beer mat. Jeez. So we've mentioned two lyrics by Steve Miller already. I bet there's, and we've already received texts and stuff about Steve Miller. Maybe it won't be the first time that won't be the last time we hear from Steve Miller in this conversation. And we are talking about bad music lyrics, bad pop rock lyrics, some of the worst. We'll give you some examples, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's a Monday morning, and so we're going to hear a joke from my dad a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 is what we're talking about, or that's our phone number for talk and text. And we are talking about the worst rock or pop lyrics ever. And we also happen to see that Steve Miller will be represented pretty well here as we talk about stupid lyrics. So, got some texts that have come in already. 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you, talk or text, with bad lyrics. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin says, Chuck Berry's My Ding-a-Ling was bad. Yes. And as mentioned before, that was Chuck Berry's only number one hit. You just think about that for a moment. You know, one of the pioneers, one of the godfathers and inventors of rock and roll. And My Ding-a-Ling was the only move, the only song that hit that for of his that hit number one. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like this stupid novelty song that was recorded at some live concert, and that's the song that goes to number one. Chuck Berry, who recorded some of the most classic, important rock and roll songs of all time, and My Ding-a-Ling was the song that hit number one. Mark the Breadman said, the lyrics that have driven me nuts for many years is Meatloaf's I'll Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That. That is, that song cracks me up. That song just cracks me up. That was on Bat Outta Hell 2 when they did the sequel to Bat Outta Hell. I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. Well, we used to make fun of that. When that album was out, I was in a show called Bitches, which I've talked about before. It was a show where it was all male, it was all actors, and everybody was in drag. And we would sing that stupid lyric over and over again in the green room while we were playing Uno with the 50 decks of cards. Yeah, that's really ridiculous. Jim Steinem, by the way, is the guy who wrote those songs, wrote Bat Outta Hell, he wrote Bat Outta Hell 2, and he has a tendency to be very dramatic. Like, his songs are, like, really dramatic, not just in lyrics, but the way that they're recorded and how he has whoever is singing sing them. They have to be very over the top and very, very, very dramatic. And he wrote Total Eclipse of the Heart, which is another ridiculous song. And I mean, if you listen to Total Eclipse of the Heart, it sounds like a Meatloaf song because it was written by Jim Steinem. But even Bonnie Tyler's performance of it was ridiculous and sounded like Meatloaf. 815 area code says, who let the dogs out? Yeah. Yeah. Who let the dogs out? Who was it? The Meat Men?
Baja Men.
Oh, the Meat Men. That's a punk band. They released an album, the Meat Men. Dan, they were a punk band. They released an album with a really funny cover. It was like just like a hand-drawn cover. And the album was called We're the Meat Men and You Suck. That was the name. It's still one of my favorite album titles ever. We're the Meat Men and You Suck. And the album cover is hilarious. It looks like an 8-year-old drew the picture. Can you do a Google image search? We're the Meat Men and You Suck. And I want to say the album came out in the 80s, like in the early to mid 80s. Just thought it was the funniest. I thought it was the funniest album cover of all time. It's ridiculous.
Yep, that is pretty awesome.
Isn't that great?
Three guys on stage. Drummer's off stage throwing his band.
Yeah.
The crowd. One guy slipping him the finger. Yeah, very nice.
We're the Meat Men and You Suck. Classic album. Well, I don't know if it's a classic album, but it's the cover is pretty great. The title is great, too. Way to endear yourself to your fans. We're the Meat Men and You Suck. All right. Let's see. Here's Lulu on WGN. Hi, Lulu.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
I'm beginning to hate you guys. I need to be asleep. And I'm addicted to your show. Okay, here's the song. And I apologize. It was the early 70s, I believe. And it was a band called the Starlight or Starland Vocal Band.
Yeah, Afternoon Delight.
Yes.
Yeah. That was 1970. That was 1976, it was a huge hit. That song was a huge hit, and a lot of people didn't know what the lyrics were about. A lot of people didn't know. They would sit, like, kids would be singing along. Oh, Afternoon Delight. They would be singing along and not realize that it was about having a quickie in the daytime. And didn't realize it. And then it had a whole new life in Anchorman. Because they perform it in Anchorman. So,
oh my God!
Yeah.
Okay, I have to make one more comment.
Yeah.
I like Who Let the Dogs Out? Because I have dogs.
Okay.
Funny song. Okay. See ya.
All right. Take care. There you go. Who Let the Dogs Out? I liked it in 1999 when the Mariners played the Sox. I did enjoy it then. All right. Here's Mark on WGN. Go ahead, Mark.
Now, one radio station called these lyrics Kmart Shakespeare. And you got to realize, I am normally a fan of Jimmy Webb. In fact, I went to see him when he was at Shuba's. But MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark. All the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it because it took so long to make it. And I'll never have that recipe again. Oh God!
Yeah, that's we've got texts on that one already.
If I didn't like the instrumental interlude so much, I would throw that song away. But I do.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, listen, you know, that's a ridiculous. That is a ridiculous lyric, and the lyrics from MacArthur Park are pretty ridiculous. But Jimmy Webb, for the most part, was a, you know. It has written some incredible songs, one of the best songwriters ever. But yeah, someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think I can take it because it took so long to make it, and I'll never have that recipe again. And the fact that Richard Harris recorded that song, that really adds like a whole level of curiosity to it. Like Richard Harris, and it was a hit. It was like a number one hit for Richard Harris. Yeah, the actor Richard Harris, for people who weren't around. Richard Harris recorded it, and then later, Donna Summer recorded a great version of it, like a disco version of it, which was fantastic. But the lyrics are ridiculous, but I too like both versions of it. I mean, you know, I don't understand any of the lyrics. I don't know what the hell's going on when I'm listening, you know, lyrically. It makes no sense. It's silly. It's idiotic. But I'm telling you, I like both versions of that song. I like the Richard Harris version, and I like the Donna Summer version. Dan, did you ever watch SCTV when you were younger?
I did not.
Okay, well, SCTV, Dave Thomas played Richard Harris And he was on Mel's Rock Pile, which was a fake like American Bandstand kind of thing that they did, and it was hosted by Mel, who was Eugene Levy. But Dave Thomas came on as Richard Harris, dressed like with the bad 70s shirt and everything, and he performs MacArthur Park. But there, as you know, you've heard MacArthur Park. Mm-hmm. There was a really long instrumental break in the middle of it, so he's up there dancing, and then like he would just sit down. And then get back up, dance. It was just this classic. It was a great SCTV bit. Dave Thomas as Richard Harris performing MacArthur Park with the full ridiculous instrumental break. So, yeah, ridiculous lyrics right there. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the worst lyrics in music, and we want to hear from you. For talk or text, 312-981-7200. News is coming up. All right, welcome back. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. And it is Monday, so my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And we are talking about the worst rock or pop lyrics. Westword.com had a piece that was written by Josiah Hesse. And he included a bunch of very, very questionable lyrics, and we've been adding our own to it. He also has The New Seekers on here. I'd like to teach the world to sing. I'd like to build the world a home and furnish it with love, grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. Begins as a Coca-Cola ad, becomes a 12 million selling single, finishes as a lesson to marketing students about how not to to be a jerk while trying to appropriate youth culture. Yeah, I'd like to teach the world to sing. That was another one of those songs that was everywhere. And that's a bad lyric. Like to build a world, a home, and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. You're going to grow honeybees and you're going to grow snow white turtle doves? I don't even know what to say there. All right, let's see. Trace in Kansas. Hi, Trace.
Hey, I got a couple songs here that might qualify. One would be Sammy Davis. I believe when he sang the Candyman Can, where he can mix them up with love to make the world go round. That was a little over the top, I thought.
Yep. Yep.
Then you had the Archies, Sugar Sugar.
That was
a little hard to handle.
That, no, I know. Those are dumb lyrics, but I like that song. I like Sugar Sugar. I like that song.
No, I can understand that. Now, my last song that I would say would move into a psychedelic era. That would be Procol Harum. It was our class song our senior year in high school, was The Whiter Shade of Pale. I don't think anybody in the class had any concept idea of what instigated them lyrics, but something about when the ceiling blew away and yada, yada, yada. That was just maybe LSD-induced. Thank you.
All right, take care. I can't believe that was his school song. That was his senior song, was A Whiter Shade of Pale? Really? I'm trying to remember. You know what our prom theme was when I went to prom in high school?
What's that?
It was Up Where We Belong. Because it was the song from Officer and a Gentleman. Love lift us up where we belong. That was the theme for our prom. And homecoming one year, I think it was like my junior year, maybe my sophomore year, junior year, I think. Our homecoming theme was Time for Me to Fly by REO. That was our homecoming theme. Now, Dan, when you guys had dances, was it Mother Garen that you guys would combine with?
No, because I think they were more. It was more Holy Cross Garen. We were in Rez, kind of split between whatchamacallit, Notre Dame and St. Pat's, and I think there was a Notre Dame for girls at that time.
There was.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So. Did you guys, remember your themes of anything?
I do not remember our themes. The only thing I can remember was in eighth grade, we had this, we had to settle for like an oldies song about friendship because some lunkheads refused to have Boys to Men as our song for some reason. I can't remember. It was just a ridiculous reason. Yeah,
they didn't want Boys to Men.
They didn't want Boys to Men, and they're like, "It was stupid," you know, and like, "We're not going to show up if we, you know, if it's Boys to Men." And
oh, really?
So, like, yeah. So
that is stupid.
Yeah. So, but that's the only thing I can remember.
Yeah, I just remember "Up Where We Belong" was for prom, and then one of the homecomings was. I just think "Time for Me to Fly" is hilarious because the song is about breaking up with somebody. That's what the song's about. from an album called High Infidelity. Josh in Indiana says, how about Steve Miller rhyming abracadabra with reach out and grab ya? Yeah, that's another one. Boy, he's the king of ridiculous rhymes, Steve Miller. 773, Led Zepp from Stairway to Heaven, if there's a bustle in your hedgerow. Yeah, that's a little goofy. Megan says that the song Life by Desiree has one of the worst lyrics. Oh, I get the shivers. I don't want to see a ghost. It's a sight that I fear most. I'd rather have a piece of toast and watch the evening news. It's terrible, she writes. I don't know that song. The only song by her I know by Desiree is "You Gotta Be Blah, You Gotta Be Blah, You Gotta Be Blah Blah." That's the only one that I like that song. I remember the video; she just does a lot of stuff with her hands,
right?
In the video, like she does a lot of like hand movements in that video. Tony says, "No more Steve Miller. How about he ain't gonna let those two escape justice? He's making his living off of the people's taxes." It's that one of the worst lines in musical history. How did that band ever become popular? Yeah. Here's the thing about Steve Miller, because I like a lot of Steve Miller's music. I do. The lyrics are ridiculous. You know, and a lot of the lyrics are unbelievably stupid. But I like Steve Miller. I saw Steve Miller. You know, Dan, you know that I went to go see. It was one of the Super Bowls of Rock. It was the World Series of Rock. Super Bowls of Rock in the 70s, those were at Soldier Field. The World Series of Rock, Comiskey. So this was a World Series of Rock. And so it was, I can't remember the first band, but one of the bands was Pablo Cruz. Dan, do you know Pablo Cruz?
I have heard him. I don't know much
about him. How long has this been going on? That's their. That's like their big hit. How long has this been going on? I think they had a couple of other hits, too. And then it was Steve Miller, and the headliners were the Eagles. And we left one song into the Eagles set. Because I just wanted to see Steve Miller. I'm trying to remember. I think there was a band before Pablo Cruz, because I think Pablo Cruz went second. And was one of those Super Bowls of Rock or a World Series of Rock. And we left. We stayed for a couple of Eagles songs, but we left. One, because I think my dad and I just wanted to beat traffic. And two, neither of us particularly liked the Eagles. So, D says, Eve 6, Inside Out. I burn like a wicker cabinet. I'm afraid I don't know. Eve 6, Inside Out. I burn like a wicker cabinet. I don't know that lyric. It certainly is weird. How about Puddle of Mud and Control? I love the way you look at me. I love the way you smack my ass. I love the dirty things you do. I have control of you. And our author here says, how much control can you have while someone is smacking your ass and doing dirty things to you? um, Oasis, do you know what I mean? All my people right here, right now, do you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. There's no greater illustration of Noel Gallagher's 1997 demise as a songwriter with the inability to finish this sentence. Oh, man. Warrant, Cherry Pie, has made the list of worst. She's my cherry pie, cool drink of water, such a sweet surprise. Is she a dessert or a beverage? First lesson in lyric writing, don't mix your metaphors. Stupid cherry pie. All right. Let's break here. We got some weather for you, and then we'll take a break and come back with more. We want to hear from you. What are the stupidest lyrics that you have heard from songs? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call up and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. The Price is Right is coming to town, man. Yeah. And we are talking about terrible lyrics. Some of the worst and most ridiculous lyrics in pop and rock music. And we would love to hear from you. And have some fun with this goofy lyric stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Coming up, Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock with the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All of that and more. All right, let's get back to some of these stupid lyrics. Enrique Iglesias is pointed out here. I can be your hero. I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. That was another really big hit. That song was everywhere. How about this? Christina Aguilera's A Genie in a Bottle. If you want to be with me, baby, there's a price to pay. I'm a genie in a bottle. You got to rub me the right way. If you want to be with me, I can make your wish come true. You got to make a big impression. Got to like what you do. The attempted innuendo here as Aguilera sings of her genie is as crass as anything Insane Clown Posse has ever written. How about the Hollies with Carrie Ann? Considered a ridiculous lyric. People live and learn, but you're still learning. You use my mind and I'll be your teacher. When the lesson's over, you'll be with me. That's just ridiculous. The first two verses of the song describe a creative, independent young lady with each band member singing a different verse. But when it's time for Graham Nash to step up to the mic, he delivers this creepy string of words that could easily read as a cult leader talking to his younger subjects. Oh, boy, here's one. Herman's Hermits. Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something rare, but it's sad she doesn't love me now. If she finds that I've been round to see you, tell her that I'm well and feeling fine. Don't let on. Don't say she's broke my heart. Then the author says, it's obvious why the daughter of Mrs. Brown left this chump. He hangs out with her mother, trolling for sympathy. Something fishy's going on there. You've been hanging out with my mom too much. That's enough. All right, let's see. Here's Brandy on WGN. Hi, Brandy.
Hi, good morning, Meg.
Morning.
So as soon as I got in the car and I heard stupid lyrics, I instantly thought of Shaggy's song, Angel. And it says something about you have my appreciation for something staying with me through my incarceration.
Very good. Very
instantly,
good.
Instantly stupid lyric. Like, yep. Wow.
Let's get that to rhyme. We can rhyme that with that with incarceration.
Exactly.
Ridiculous. That's so funny. All right, Brandy, thanks.
No problem. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Hi, Dad. Good morning.
Morning.
I got two. I like the Beatles, but McCartney wrote that song. Why don't we do it in the road?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. The lyric, it's a repetitive lyric. And the second one is, I think it's Jimmy Buffett. Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw?
Yeah.
I like Jimmy Buffett as well. But
yeah. Yeah, that's
the two that I got.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's definitely Jimmy Buffett, if I'm not mistaken. That's definitely Jimmy Buffett. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, John.
Yep. See you.
Take care. Why Don't We Do It in the Road? That is a really silly song. I like it. Because I kind of like all of Beatles songs, most of them. But that is a really silly lyric. There's no question about it. Why Don't We Do It in the Road? And that's kind of all they say the entire song. No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road? Let's see. Blur. She's So High. She's So High, I Want to Crawl All Over Her. The author says the song itself is more than decent Stone Roses ripoff, but this chorus, particularly when sung by a 90-pound Damon Albarn, reminds me too much of a Robert Crumb-style erotic gigantism for the song to be really enjoyed. Oh, here's a good one. Poison, Unskinny Bop. Poison has a lot of stupid lyrics. They really do. Poison is Brad Michaels has written a lot of stupid lyrics. There's no question about it. Like gasoline, you want to pump me, then leave me when you get your fill. Yeah, Unskinny Bop, 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 bop. She just loves to play Unskinny Bop, nothing more to say. Having nothing more to say after repeating the phrase Unskinny Bop a few times really calls into question the idea that you have anything to say in the first place. Oh, man. Here's Adam in Rockford on WGN. Hi, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Great topics, as always. Just one, and this has to be the ultimate what in the hell am I actually listening to song, Bop by Hanson.
Yeah, the lyrics are questionable, but I actually like I like that song. I think it's a good pop song, but the lyrics are ridiculous.
I mean it was a bit of an earworm at some time.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But I mean it's almost completely phonetics. And also I was just telling the screen that basically the entire catalog of pop music, especially from the female artist side, was so dredged in this, you know, unambiguous, you know, really overt, thinly veiled sexuality. And we're talking about, you know, people at that time, you know, Mandy Moore came out with some songs with some questionable things that were in them.
Yeah.
Christina Aguilera, obviously. But and also people that just commenting very quickly because you were talking about Unskinny Bop. There is so much stuff from that generation of music, and I'll just call into question a lot of the things that David Lee Roth is saying in the background of anything that he's on all of the time.
Yeah.
The guy is just ridiculous and probably high on drugs all the time, but who isn't? Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care. Who isn't? I'm not. Oh, man. Yeah. Bop. How about, Dan, how about the Crash Test Dummies, right? They got the...
Yes.
That's a classic. Hold on, I got to sneeze.
Gesundheit, while you sneeze. They also had a song about Superman, I want to say, that also had some very odd lyrics as well.
Wait a second. Dan, I sneezed so hard I pulled my headphone jack out of the...
Oh, my goodness.
You know, we got these high chairs now. We're in these high chairs.
Right.
I'm afraid if I sneeze, pull my headphone jack out, I'll go flying across the room. I don't want to go flying across the room.
No, that'd be bad. You don't want to hurt your headphones either.
I don't want my headphones.
Adam fixed them,
Adam fixed them, too. He's a wizard. I'm not just saying that because he wears a really big hat.
That's how you can notice him at remotes, folks. He's the guy in the really big hat.
And wizard robes. All right. Next mentioned here is Belle and Sebastian with I'm a Cuckoo. And the lyric is, I'd rather be in Tokyo. I'd rather listen to Thin Lizzy-o. Come on, really? Wait a minute. Did Steve Miller write that for Bell and Sebastian? All right. We have to break here, and we'll be back with more terrible lyrics. 312-981-7200. News is next. Good morning, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. It's Monday morning. That means in a little while my dad's going to call and tell a joke to start your work week off on a funny note. And he calls in every Monday morning to tell jokes, and we'll do it again in just a little while. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive to start your work week out. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're talking about terrible lyrics in songs. Ridiculous, laughable, stupid lyrics. And some of the worst ones out there. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We've got some more here. Here's one for Skid Row, 18 in life. Ricky was a young boy. He had a heart of stone. He lived 9 to 5 and worked his fingers to the bone. Just barely out of school. Came from the edge of town. Fought like a switchblade so no one could take him down. No! He had no money. Oh, no good at home. Walked the streets as a soldier, and he fought the world alone. says, now, no matter how dramatically Sebastian Bach sang this song, and no matter how adorably delinquent he looked while doing it, the story it tells never really seems all that bad. I mean, the kid had a good job and was still living with his dad, and then he got kicked out. Big deal. Get a haircut and grow up, you lazy hair bag. Dan, did I ever tell you that I knocked Sebastian Bach on his ass?
I do remember this story. You should tell it again though, because it's been a while.
He was it was a Soundgarden show, and we were on the main floor and in a mosh pit. This was like, you know, back in the early '90s. When do they still have? Yeah, they have mosh pits now, right?
Yeah,
I just haven't gone to a concert that required moshing. The last concert I went to was Buffalo Tom. It was a bunch of 50-year-old guys standing around going, yeah! So he was being a real jerk. He came pushing in and knocking people over, some people didn't know it was him, some people did, and it was apparently very, I knew it was him. And he was knocking people, he was being a real horse's butt. So I ended up knocking him on his ass. And Sebastian Bach is about 6'3", and I'm 5'8". And I forearmed him. I forearmed him, and Sebastian Bach went down, and I got applause from the people around me. He didn't strike back or anything. He got up, and he kind of did a little more moshing, and then he left. But that's one of my claim to fame, is I knocked Sebastian Bach on his butt. He was acting like a jerk. I don't know why, because I'm not a confrontational person, but one, he was acting like a jerk and he was hurting people, and two, it was Sebastian Bach. Three, I probably had a few drinks in me, I would imagine. I probably had a few beers in me. So, anyway. But then I would, you know, Dan, I would watch those reality shows on VH1 that he would appear on. Like, he was on Surreal Life, and he was in the House of Rock, where they put a whole bunch of rock guys in one house. I can't remember what the hell the name of the show was, but it was like they put, like, Nugent and, like, four other guys, Sebastian Bach and, like, three or four other guys in this house, and they were living together and recording together or something like that. They were like a band, and they were recording, and they lived in the same mansion. And then it got to the point where I was actually starting to find Sebastian Bach very amusing while I was watching those stupid VH1 reality shows. Sebastian Bach showed up on a few of them, and I was like, this guy's pretty funny. Can't stand his music, but he's pretty funny.
Supergroup,
that's what it was. And it was him, and I remember Nugent was on it.
Nugent, Jason Bonham, right. Evan Seinfeld, McGee.
Yeah, Evan Steinfeld. He was the guy from a punk band. He was all bald and tattooed. I can't remember what band he was in.
Biohazard.
Biohazard, right. Right. Oh, brother. All right, let's see. Here's Brian on WGN. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Nick. How's it going, buddy?
All right.
One of the weirdest lyrics I can remember is Depeche Mode's "People are people, so why should it be that we should get along so awfully?" I was like, what? Who writes this? I can write music. That's crazy. Right?
Again, that's it's a pretty stupid lyric, but I like that song.
it's good music, but it's just like, it's weird.
It is weird. No question about it.
You're talking about getting a smash back. I got into with Jamie Lane from Warrant.
You did?
I got to fight with him. Oh, yeah, I knocked him down also. at the Silver Slipper in Ottawa, of all places.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. They were playing a concert in 2001. It was Rat, Warrant, L.A. Guns, Notkin, and I forgot what the other one was.
Good
the Firehouse.
Good Lord.
And I know. It was really cool. And, and we went inside afterwards, and the main guitarist people sat around us, and we were chit-chat with them. And then he just came and sat down. I'm like, these are all like my rock guys from as a kid, you know. And we were sitting there drinking with them, and the strippers are coming over. And he got jealous of one of the girls we were with, and we had to leave, and he got smart with her. And I told him, I said, leave her alone. And we got into a scruff right there in the slipper. And
Wow. Good for you, man. That's funny.
And now he's dead, and I feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you didn't kill him, Brian, so, you know.
No, I did not.
Thank you, Brian. Take care.
All right, man.
Wow, me and the listeners did a little hair, did some damage to some hair band guys. All right. 815 area code says, every song sung by Gary Puckett. 219 area code says, Funky for You by Nice and Smooth. The song is full of bad lyrics, but it's great. These include Spring Again and I'm Feeling Fine. Pass me an ice cold glass of wine so I can get mellow, lay back, and let my girl play the cello. Hello, I hate Jello. Do you know that song, dude?
I am unfamiliar.
Let's see, the 785 area code, Poke Salad Annie, Poke Salad Annie, bam, banana net. Yeah, that is a pretty good, but the Elvis version rules. The Elvis version of Poke Salad Annie rules. 224 area code, Miracles by Jefferson Starship. You know, it's got a lyric that I can't, they do say it, I mean, when the FM guys play it. And I know we got a text here from Eddie Volkman. Eddie Volkman will know what lyrics I'm talking about right now. But in the song Miracles by Jefferson Starship, I can't say it on the air. But I mean, you know, like I said, when it's played on the FM dial, they let it run. It involves how Marty Balin, who's singing the song, Marty Balin got a taste of the real world when something happened. And I can't say. I'll tell you off the air, Dan. But that's. I think that might be one of. And I remember that lyric when going, "Wow, what?" And that might be the lyric, because that is a pretty crazy song, Miracle. And I like that song, but it's like especially that lyric. I got a taste of the real world when. People who know that song right now are going, "Yeah, I remember that lyric." Eddie Volkman, right now, remembering it. Eddie Volkman says, I want to nominate Neil Diamond. I am, I said, to no one there, and no one heard at all, not even the chair. God forbid the chair isn't even listening to you. Also in the Steve Miller Abracadabra, I believe he says, I feel the magic in your caress. I feel the magic when I touch your dress. Okay, creeper. Thank you, Eddie. All right, more terrible lyrics coming up. Let's take a break here for some weather. Welcome back. everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning here, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're talking about bad lyrics, like really stupid lyrics in songs. Some of these songs are good. That's the problem, is that, you know, we like these songs, but there are just some ridiculous lyrics.
Okay.
And, yes.
Okay, on that note, I have to speak up. Because yeah. I wasn't going to say anything, because I kind of do like the song, or at least I did when it came out, but I've always thought the lyrics are just way too sappy, and that's Savage Garden, Wanna Stand With You on a Mountain.
I don't immediately know it, but it's got really corny lyrics.
You might recognize it if you heard it, because that was a pretty big hit.
I Wanna Stand With You on a Mountain, I Wanna Bathe With You in the Sea, I Wanna Lay Like... Do I need to go on?
Oh, boy.
You know what I mean?
So. Oh boy. All right. There you go. Savage Garden, everybody. Hey, it looks like 331 emo and 847 area codes are all correcting me. How long has this been going on? Was Ace, not Pablo Cruz. I got my middle of the road yacht rock bands confused. Pablo Cruz did Love Will Find a Way, It's All Right, Once You Get Past the Pain, You'll Find Another Love Again, Love Will Find a Way. That was Pablo Cruz. Sorry, I got my bad yacht rock mixed up. How Long Has This Been Going On was indeed Ace. Carrie says, I love Sir Paul, but post-Beatles until about 1990, his lyrics made little sense. Band on the Run, Magneto and Titanium Man, great songs, but they make no sense. Yeah, it's true, but they're still great. Let's not diss Wings, man. 708 area code, simply texts, Steve Miller sucks. The 905 area code says, what about Horse With No Name? Yeah, that's a pretty ridiculous song. 224 area code says Precious and Few. Yuck. Yeah, no, that is as hard to listen to a sappy song that you could ever. Do you know that song, Dan?
I do not.
Precious and few are the moments we two can share.
Good call.
Yeah. That song sucks.
By the way, I just like to support you, Vic. I too love Savage Garden. I mean,
right?
It's complete guilty pleasure, but
yes,
they were complete earworms.
Right.
How about this one? They include Striper.
What?
Striper, the Christian rock metal band, hair band.
I saw them in concert.
Wait, yes. Wait a minute.
Yellow and black tight suits. Yep.
That's right. And then instead of number 666, their number was 777.
Yeah, I was, yep, mm-hmm. I played basketball for my high school, and a friend of mine went to a church in a neighboring town, and he recruited me to play with their basketball team in a tournament.
Uh-huh.
And part of that deal was I had to go see Striper that night.
Yeah. Wait, they forced you to see Striper?
Well, I had to go along with the group.
Oh, you had to go along with the group, so you had to see Striper.
Or stay in the hotel by myself, so I went to see Striper.
Wow, that must have been something, huh?
I was just beside myself, really. When I was standing up to this, I was a little... I was the only one just not totally into it, you know, with hands in the air going nuts for Striper.
Wow. Well, Striper has one of my favorites, and that's To Hell With the Devil. And the lyric is, just a liar and a thief, the word tells us so. We like to let him know where he can go, to hell with the devil. Well, he's already there, man. You don't have to tell him to go there. That's where he is. And he likes it there, so shut up. How about this one, Jack and Diane, Hold On to 16 As Long As You Can, Changes Come Around Real Soon. I personally, and again, that song was massive. Jack and Diane, when I was a senior in high school, oh my God. Every 20 seconds that song was on the radio. But the lyric on that one that always made me crazy, Dan, you know Jack and Diane, right?
I do.
Is sucking on chili dogs outside the taste of freeze. Who sucks on a chili dog? Sucking on chili dogs. Outside the taste of freeze.
Maybe they're one of those folks that doesn't like their foods to touch, so they have to get the chili off first.
That doesn't make any sense. Sucking on chili dogs. All right. Mike says, Steve Miller is Les Paul's godson. Maybe that's why people let him skate on his lyrics. Yeah. All right. I mean, I let him skate on his lyrics. He writes some of the stupidest lyrics ever, but I still like Steve Miller. So, 773 area code says, Dear Nick, what about Louie Louie? Mostly because we don't even know what the lyrics are. Remember, I remember that song, the story about that, Dan. That song got banned.
Right.
Because people were like, oh, they're swearing. But they're not. The lyrics are not. They're you know, but they're just they banned the song. They were like, we can't understand what they're saying. We're pretty sure they're swearing. Don't play the song. 773 area code, hang on, Sloopy. Peter Indicator says, America, for there ain't no one for to give you no pain. That's the horse with no name. Canadian Bill says, a really good crash test dummy song for bad lyrics is Androgynous. I don't think I know that one. 309 area code says, it always sounds like Red Hot Chili Peppers run out of lyrics and Anthony just starts to bebop. Um, 414 area code, turning Japanese. Well, you know what the rumor is, what that song's about, right, Dan?
I do.
They maintain that's the Vapors who did that song. They maintain that that's not true. It's not, people say it's about masturbating. That's what they say it's about. Now, She Bop by Cyndi Lauper, she fully admits that that song is about masturbating. That one, she's like, yep. But the Vapors say nope. 231 area code says, from the 1940s, I think it's called Marcy Dotes. Dosey Dotes and Little Lambs Eat Ivy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know that. Oh, man. All right, let's see what else we've got here. Kid Rock, American Badass, and I'm back with the beaver hats and Ben Davis slacks, 30-pack of Strohs, 30-pack of hose. No Rogaine, and the propane flows. What the hell? That Kid Rock's a genius. That is I know American Badass. The only reason I know American Badass is because, you know, for a while, I don't know if you remember, Dan, but there was a period of time when The Undertaker dropped his dead man persona.
Oh, really?
Dropped his dead man persona for a couple of years and just came in on a chopper and, you know, wore a bandana. He didn't come out with Paul Bearer. He didn't have the dead man eyes and everything. He was just he came out to American Badass. That was the song he came out to. It's the only reason that I knew that song. Yeah, there was that period of time when he wasn't the Undertaker dead man. It was about 2 years, and it was the early 2000s. Sonny and Cher, the beat goes on. Charleston was once the rage, uh-huh. History has turned the page, uh-huh. The miniskirt's the current thing, uh-huh. Teeny bopper is our newborn king, uh-huh. It's another song I like. There are a lot of songs with terrible lyrics. I'm discovering there are a lot of songs with terrible lyrics that I like. I like The Beat Goes On. I think that song's awesome.
All right.
And you guys are the presidents of the co-presidents of the Savage Garden fan club.
Mm-hmm. And our listeners are the presidents of the Pablo Cruz fan club.
Apparently, yeah. Love will find a way. Pablo. I can't believe I went to go see Pablo Cruz. What was I thinking? Well, I was like 12. Pablo Cruz, Steve Miller, Eagles, Comiskey Park. Those were the days. All right. And I got a $5 t-shirt outside the place. All right. We'll take a break. The news is up after this. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the... Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call up and tell a joke because it's Monday, and that's what we do. 312-981-7200 for talk and text if you want to jump in here. We've been having some fun here talking about really bad lyrics, songs that have really terrible or stupid lyrics. And we've also been discovering that a lot of songs that I enjoy have stupid lyrics. How about this one? Van Halen, Jump. Now, the Jump is a really stupid song. Dan, you have to admit.
Oh, yeah.
But I love it.
Jam.
And it always reminds me of the 84 Bears, or 84 Bears, the 84 Cubs. Always. They pull this lyric from the article. It says, I ain't the worst thing you've seen. Oh, can't you see what I mean? Might as well jump, jump, might as well jump. Oh, Diamond Dave, why is it that you can sell yourself as the sexiest narcissist on the planet when you hump the camera lens and perform slow motion jump kicks during the video for this song, and yet the best pitch you have for the girl is your fancy, I ain't the worst thing you've seen? And that, of course, Dan, reminds me of another fun topic that we do, which is lyrics that are misheard. Like, people thought that they were saying something and they weren't. The lyrics were misheard. There is a website called kissthisguy.com. That's the website where they have, where people, you know, go there and post stories and lyrics that they have misheard. It's really hilarious. But kissthisguy.com got its name from the lyric "Kiss the Sky," excuse me while I kiss the sky, from Hendrix in Purple Haze. And people were like, think they say, excuse me while I kiss this guy. So that's a typical example. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up because of Jump is because a friend of mine used to think that the lyric was, you see me standing here, I got my back against the record machine. I eat the worst things you've seen. Oh, can't you see what I mean? So it's like picturing David Letterman, like, or David Letterman, David, David Letterman. David Lee Roth leaning up against a jukebox eating like worms or something. I eat the worst things you've seen. Julie says Donovan's Mellow Yellow. Oh, yeah, they call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. Do you know that song, Dan?
I do not.
You don't know Mellow Yellow?
I'm sure if I heard
it. Oh, man, they call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. Well, drugs were involved. Come on, man. It's Donovan.
I thought Donovan was a teetotaler.
Was he?
Right, because he's very Christian, if I remember correctly.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought he was high as a kite all the time. You know who his daughter is, right?
No.
Ione Sky.
Really?
Yeah. Now tell me he wasn't high when he named her. I didn't know that. I mean, if that's, that would be, because I thought counter to that, Dan. I really did.
Yeah, I might be mixing it up with another. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Cat Stevens?
No. I'll figure it out.
Well, he's not a Christian. He's a Muslim.
Right.
I don't know. 815 area code. Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. Then the listener says, like, maybe the jail? That's great. Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. Like, maybe the jail.
I'm thinking of Dion, by the way.
Ah, yes, Dion.
Yes.
Hey, one name.
D.
D. Yeah. That makes total sense. Oh, that's fantastic. That jailbreak line was great. That's the text of the morning. You like maybe the jail? Again, dumb, but Thin Lizzy rules. So that's okay. Thin Lizzy O.
Thin Lizzy O.
Yeah. 630 area code. Eve 6 Inside Out is the worst emo high school poem ever. That's the second time we've gotten a mention of this. I don't even know this song. 815 area code. I can't believe Eminem is not mentioned. Why?
I was kind of surprised by that one, too. I mean, like, I think it's one of those things where obviously when you're doing so many rhymes,
yeah,
you're gonna hit a bad one every once in a while.
Yeah. Carrie, now that I think about Sir Paul and Steve Miller, they do a duet on Paul's Flaming Pie album. Lyrics are not too crazy, but they don't rhyme at all. All right. All right, the person who wrote this article now is just walking on hallowed ground now, man. You watch your step. Dust in the Wind by Kansas. Dude, don't play around. I close my eyes only for a moment and the moment's gone. All my dreams pass before my eyes, a curiosity. Dust in the Wind. All they are is dust in the wind. All right, it's stupid. But I love that song, man. It is a stupid song. Of course, they have My Humps by Black Eyed Peas here. I'm a get you drunk, get you drunk, get you love drunk off my hump. My hump, 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 my lovely little lumps. That's fantastic. If you, is it Alanis Morissette? No, it wasn't
yes.
Alanis. Was yes, it Alanis Morissette?
It was Alanis Morissette.
As if for this stuff, when I'm reading these lyrics, I feel like I'm ripping off Steve Allen.
Do you used to bit like this?
Oh yeah, no, he would take lyrics or of songs and then just read them seriously, like they were. It was a bit that Steve Allen essentially invented every late night bit. You know, ever. I mean, you know, like, you know, the second biggest innovator in late night was Craig Ferguson, because he did stuff that was ridiculous. But anything like a lot of the weird stuff that guys still do on the late night shows, that was all invented by Steve Allen. And Steve Allen did these where he would read lyrics, like, straight. All right. Color Me Bad, I Wanna Sex You Up. Girl, you make me feel real good. We can do it till we both wake up. What? That's some uneventful sex. I mean, what are we talking about here? Until we both wake up. I want to sex you up all night. You make me feel real good. I want to rub you down. Believe it or not, 2.5 million people bought this single in 1991, defying logic in suggesting that the pickup line, I want to sex you up, could actually be arousing instead of inducing the need for a shower. I don't understand this until we both wake up part. That's weirder than on top of that, the whole I want to sex you up all night, whatever, that is creepy. And then you look at those guys. You remember what Color Me Bad looked like, Dan?
Oh, I knew.
They had the sculpted beards. You know how those guys have the little skinny sculpted beards and the fades? White guys with fades. You know what I mean?
Dynamite suits.
Oh, my God. Color Me Bad. All right. The Bee Gees. How deep is your love? I believe in you. You know the door to my very soul. How deep is your love? How deep is your love? I really want to learn. We belong to you and me.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah.
What about, you got to read these lyrics on the air. Snow is the, I believe he's the performer, informer.
The guy who raps 95 miles an hour?
Yeah, he wrote this song, Informer. I believe he wrote it.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, no, I know the song.
That's got a Licky Boom Boom Down. That's got to rank up there in stupid lyrics.
Oh, yeah. And I don't, but I don't understand any of the rest of the lyrics.
I don't either.
Because he's just down. Like, what?
You just actually read the exact lyrics.
Yeah, that's probably probably what it is. Man, dipping in on the How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees. It's another song I absolutely love. Another song I love. How about this one, U2 with Discotheque? See, now, I love this song, too. I love Discotheque. But here are the lyrics. You know you're chewing bubble gum. You know what it is. But you still want some because you just can't get enough of that lovey-dovey stuff. Really, Bono? I guess I never knew the lyrics to Discotheque.
That would be another one of those bands that's really good and, you know, has been around for so long that you're kind of like, yeah, that wasn't your best effort. Because, like, there's a lyric in Beautiful Day, which is, a wonderful song, but, like, something about tuna fleets clearing out the seas or something. Look, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Actually, Beautiful Day is one of my very favorite U2 songs. I love that song. And I love Discotheque, too. That's a really underrated album, too. All right. Hey, stupid lyrics. There are plenty of them to go around. 312-981-7200. We're going to break here. And we'll come back. My dad's going to tell a joke. And then we'll wrap up the show and all these stupid lyrics that we've been having fun with here on WGN. So let's take a break for the weather here. And then my dad will call in.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go. With your music intro.
Ah! It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey! What'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Yeah, that's right. You know that theme. And when you hear it, you know that we are going to hear a joke. Monday morning, every week, my dad calls in and tells a joke because it's a jokey, jokey time. Coming up after 5 o'clock is the opening bell. And coming up in a couple of minutes, it's the Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Let's talk to my dad. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Nick.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. All right.
I got a song, too.
Bad lyrics?
Yeah, You Talk Too Much by Joe Jones. Said, you talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk too much, you even worry my pet.
Oh, that's good, man. That's good.
All
you
right.
Even worry
it's
my
1960.
Pet. Okay. All right, good. All right, you got a joke. How's Mom, by the way?
Joe. She's doing great.
Good. Good. Okay, let's
Everything
hear.
Now is drive-through. Anywhere you go, they have a drive-through. In California, they even have a burial service called Jump in a Box.
All right. All right.
Jump in a Box. All right. All right, Dad. Thanks, buddy.
All right, Nick.
Okay, there you go. Take care. You even worry my pet.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
That's right, and he'll do it again next week. He'll tell another joke. By the way, we have the Informer by Snow lyrics. Dan, you found the actual lyrics?
I did. I just gave you a portion because apparently that is 7 verses long. So this is just the beginning with the chorus.
And again, we can't understand these words because Snow wrapped at 97,000 miles an hour. But the lyrics are, Informer, you say, Daddy, me snow, me, I'll go blame, a licky boom boom down. Detective Mon said, Daddy, me snow, me stab someone down the lane, a licky boom boom down. Police then come, and now they blow down me door. One him come crawl through my window. So then they put me in the back, the car at the station. From that point on, me reach my destination. When the destination reached, it was the East Detention, where them whipped down me pants, looked up me bottom so. Informer, you say, Daddy, me snow, me, I'll go blame, a licky boom boom down. Detective Mon said, Daddy, me snow, me stab someone down the lane, a licky boom boom down. That is poetry. Pure poetry. Robert says, I'm a huge Rush fan, but the lyrics to Tom Sawyer are ridiculous. The lyrics to a lot of Rush songs are ridiculous. And again, I love Rush, but the lyrics to a lot. There are a lot of Rush songs that have really stupid lyrics. Listen to the song Trees.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees.
It's a political allegory using trees. Danny, have you ever heard Trees?
Can't say that I have.
Oh, my God. And they've written some. Neil Peart writes the lyrics to most of the songs, and he writes really stupid lyrics. And yes, Tom Sawyer is ridiculous. That song is a jam. Seven seven three area code says, "I love McCartney too, but somebody's knocking at the door. Someone's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, open the door and let him in." That song rules. Wouldn't you ask somebody to open the door if they were closer to the door? See, I picture Paul McCartney like laying on the couch or something. And the person who's visiting him is really near the front door. And he's just like, "But please, do me a favor. Open the door and let him in. I don't want to get up. I'm watching my stories." All right. A few more here. Here's a classic. Iron Butterfly, Inagata DeVita. Now, you know the origin of that, right, Dan?
I do, yes.
Yeah. They were so, when they were putting the song together, they were so drunk that they couldn't, it's supposed to be in the Garden of Eden. But they were so loaded that nobody could say the phrase, and they were just drunk, so they're like, "In the Garden of Eden." And that's where it came from. It's supposed to be in the Garden of Eden, but they were so wasted, they couldn't even say those words. So it became Inagata DeVita. Train with Soul Sister. Your lipstick stains on the front lobe of my left side brains. I knew I wouldn't forget you, and so I went and let you blow my mind. Elton John, your song. See, that's another song. I love this song. This was when Elton John was good. "It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no." That song rules, man. And but they have number one here of they think is the stupidest lyric is the Rolling Stones. "It's only rock and roll, but I like it, yes I do, yes I like it." That song again is a jam. I don't understand what the issue is. That song is a jam. So we used it to open up Vinyl Shop. That's the song we used to open up Vinyl Shop. So all right, stupid lyrics, everybody. Hey, we're going to talk about food tomorrow. A fascinating book with seven. That's the day. What's tomorrow?
Jen Bosworth.
Oh, Jen Bosworth will be here. I'm sorry. I'm getting my days all screwed up, man.
All good.
Jen Bosworth, our good friend Jen Bosworth, live in studio with us tomorrow. So tune in for that. Haven't visited with Jen in a while. It'll be fun. All right. The news is coming up.